Let's begin.
This is the Boss.
I'm the Boss.
And the Gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gao and Carla Dawson. I got
that. Welcome in, everybody. It is Monday night, and all is right. I'm sitting next to the Monday Night Delight, Carla Dawson. How are you?
I am good, and I'm going to have to call you Dancing David.
Dancing David?
We had some fun this weekend. We were at a good party, and I saw you cutting up the dance floor with your bride. It was pretty impressive.
Well,
you got the moves, like
when
Jagger.
When the band is that good, you just let it ride. And, Jose, I might give you a little notice. It was almost like going to the hip-hop class she'd been trying to get us to attend. Her hip-hop dance class instructor was actually there, and I danced next to her.
Jose. Yes,
so
you did.
You've been holding out. You've got some moves.
He's got some serious
moves. So why is he so shy that he doesn't want to go to the class?
He's playing it up, Jose.
I'm a little nervous out on that dance floor. Although, with 2.2 shots of vodka and just the right music, I can really go.
He had it going on.
A little liquid courage
helps
today.
Even breaking a little sweat, too. It was pretty exciting.
So what you're saying is you want a pregame for the hip-hop class?
Yeah, but that's
which does start at 9:30 a.m., man.
On a Saturday?
Yeah.
That's not a problem.
Pre-gaming?
It would be a little difficult. It is supposed to be an exercise class, after all.
Yes, that's right. So just know you two are not escaping me.
All right, we have an exciting Monday night matchup tonight. I mean, the Vikings and Seahawks, this is a marquee matchup. Monday Night Football is back with a fury. And a matchup that has significant playoff implications because you look at Seattle, they're 9-2, a half game now behind the 49ers, who are 10-2 in their division. And then Minnesota.
Tight.
Yes, it's very good division. And then Minnesota comes in at 8-3. And as we stand right now, the number five seed in the conference, in NFC, number five seed is Seattle. If they win tonight, they go right up to the top. They would be 10-2. Right up there with the 49ers. A chance at the number one seed. If they lose, they go all the way down to six. So a huge swing in seeding from perhaps 1 to 6.
That's nuts. And tonight, Vikings are without Adam Thielen. Dalvin Cook needs to show up and show out, right, if the Vikings need to win?
Indeed. Dalvin Cook, a key figure. Vikings at home, a great matchup. When we come back, we'll look at the matchups from around this weekend and also look at Alabama and the Patriots losing in the same weekend.
Say what? Woo!
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, everybody. And there is so much to unpack after huge football weekend.
College and professional was a winner.
Well, let me blend the two for a minute because I sat there thinking, when can you look back? When can you remember both the Patriots and Alabama losing in the same weekend? I mean, look at Alabama. They generally lose one or two games a year. Patriots sometimes lose 3 to 6 games a year. So it would have to be a strange coincidence that they would both lose in the same weekend.
I wonder if it has happened in Jose's lifetime.
Yeah. Jose may not have been born. It goes back so far. But it does go back. It's 2011 that Alabama and the Patriots lost in the same weekend. And it's sort of interesting historically because it was the weekend of November 5th where Alabama lost LSU 9-6. Remember, it's a defensive struggle, field goals.
Field goal game.
Incredible game. In the regular season, Alabama lost to LSU. And the same weekend then, the following day, the Patriots lost to the Giants. And so that was 24-20. Interestingly, later in that year, Alabama came back to beat LSU in the BCS championship game, and the Patriots and the Giants met in the Super Bowl. The Giants prevailed in that one.
That was Eli Manning, and then it was a Les Miles Tigers team, right?
That's right. And that Tigers team was ferocious. They won the regular season, but to beat Alabama twice in one year was just impossible. Alabama went away with a championship that year. Incredible, though. Both those.
Really incredible.
Now, when I look back at that and you think about the loss of Alabama and the loss of the Patriots. It's sort of funny today when you look at all the sports talk. All I heard about was how Alabama lost and how they were out of character, and is this the end of Alabama? Patriots, oh my gosh, the Patriots have lost. What's happened to Tom Brady? His receivers are no good. How come the offense doesn't work? It was more, all the stories were all about Alabama losing and the Patriots losing.
It's like, what about, how did the opponents, how about those opponents?
Let's what about them. Those guys?
Did they win or yeah. did the opponents lose?
Listen, Dallas I'm telling was... you this. Bo Nix was outstanding for Auburn.
True freshman.
And Deshaun Watson was outstanding for the Texans. Yes, you was. Can't overlook these guys.
Yeah. I love that you're giving them love.
Because, well, they need the love.
Yeah, they do need the love, and they deserve the love. And it was, I think what was notable about the Patriots-Texans game, if you just tuned into the final score, it looked like the game was a squeaker. But with 4 minutes left, the Patriots had 9 points on the board, and the Texans had a commanding lead.
Yeah, Patriots rallied well, and given their history, they did send a little bit of concern into the fans sure. of Texans. But
a few onside kicks at the end.
That's right. But the real story was the overall dominant play of the Texans. I mean, it was amazing to me that they really outplayed the Texans in all three aspects of the game, including special teams.
Outplayed the Patriots, you mean?
Yes, they outplayed the Patriots in all aspects. Deshaun Watson, let's start with him. He was outstanding. He made some incredible run, incredible throws while on the run, right? He had three TD passes, and then he got another TD on that pitch from Hopkins. But the pass that stood out to me, the one Deshaun Watson to Stills was a thing of beauty.
Oh, that was so amazing. And it's nice to have Stills back and Fuller back. That Houston offense has some weapons.
Yeah, Fuller got deep, didn't hold on to the one, just the play before Stills' long one. But Watson's ability to throw the ball downfield, he's always been a very good deep ball passer.
Yeah, no, he really has, and credit them. I mean, it was impressive, and he didn't make mistakes.
Nope.
And against the Patriots, I think that is the key. When you're a quarterback, actually any opponent of the Patriots, you cannot make mistakes, for sure not big ones, but really none. There's kind of no room for error, no matter what state the Patriots are in.
I mean, it is striking. The Patriots defense had only given up 4 touchdown passes all season. Mm. All season. And then Watson came in and threw 3 TD passes. Just an incredible night for the Texans offense. And looking ahead now, and it's early to look ahead, there are still some very important games to play. But as we sit, Houston, the Texans, stand at 8-4. Right now they would either be the number 3 or number 4 seed. Let's say call them the number 3 seed because they did beat Kansas City, who would be number 4. They have the tiebreaker head-to-head over at the Chiefs. Houston would be the number 3 seed at and they may have J.J. Watt coming back for the playoffs. So that would strengthen the defense, which is, well, played very well against the Patriots offense.
Yeah, and credit, former Seahawk, now Texan, Jacob Martin had the game of his life, and Bradley Roby. Wow.
Well, the narrative,
those
of course,
stood out.
The narrative has been that the Texans just gave away Clowney, but exactly. You like what you saw in Martin.
I loved what I saw in Martin. And you know what? You don't want to get someone at their peak. I mean, I think he's in the right system. He's got Romeo Crennel. He's got lots of veterans around him. And I thought the most complete game of that we've seen from the Texans all year long was last night. And in my opinion, I'd be curious to see what you think. I think it's the biggest win in the franchise's history.
Mm. It just might be. I mean, that first win over the Cowboys opening night with David Carr, quarterback, way back.
Okay.
That one is certainly near the top of the list. But frankly, all that meant was they were here, and nobody thought they were going anywhere. It was just fun to start with a win.
And you remember it well as a diehard Cowboys.
Well, I do remember it. But for an expansion team to win its first game was historic. To win it over one of the most storied teams in all of the
America's
NFL, the
team.
Cowboys. But that's a long time ago. This win over the Patriots, yes, it marks as a big one. One is, yes, it's of course the Patriots, and that's always big. Two, it gives them a nice division lead. Three, Deshaun Watson left no doubt he is a franchise quarterback.
Oh, my goodness.
Able to play at the highest level, and he did it on Sunday Night Football in a very visible stage.
Against a very stout defense that brought some serious blitzes.
Oh, yeah. They were blitzing him all night long.
Yep.
And then, not to be lost, Bill O'Brien finally got a win over Bill Belichick. And that's always been a tough one for Bill O'Brien. He's never showed up well against the Patriots. It always seemed that Belichick was out-scheming O'Brien. But last night was Bill O'Brien and the Texans' night.
It really was. It really was. And you know what I loved seeing? Being obviously, we're Texans fans. We're broadcasting here in Houston. It is so rare. I cannot remember seeing Tom Brady so openly frustrated. When he came off in the first half after a very frustrating drive that you know brought nothing, 0 points. He did a helmet drop. Did you see it? Not a mic drop, a helmet drop. Pulled it off and just dropped it. And then I thought it was so fascinating that the broadcast went right to his face where he is ripping into his receivers. I think it was Edelman and was it N'Keal Harry? Dorsett.
Dorsett.
And boy, there are F-bombs every other word, and you could see what he was saying. But that, I thought the helmet diva drop was epic. Wow.
Well, he's clearly frustrated with that receiving core. Look, it's not what it has been. Gronkowski is the big departure.
They have no tight ends.
They really don't. I mean, Ben Watson, he ought to be a number two tight end on that team. Sanu should probably be a number three wide receiver on the team, but they're putting too much pressure on those. They're asking Watson to be the number one tight end, Sanu to be sort of the number two option behind Edelman. N'Keal Harry's just not ready. I mean, he's a first-round pick, yes, but he had to sit out most of the season with injury. Now he's wading in late in the season. Philip Dorsett has never been a premier receiver, a nice deep threat to add to the mix. But that receiving core looks very weak. Sanu's been a bit of a disappointment. Of course, the Patriots gave up a second-round pick to get him, and he's struggling to get integrated. I think some of it is that these are new faces. I mean, Edelman is the one face that's familiar. Remember, Ben Watson was with the team. They cut him, and then they brought him back. So he hasn't been there.
Which they do often.
Right, but they haven't had the continuity there at all.
No, and you know, you bring up a good point when you give kind of the depth order of receivers. Because if you think about it, they had Demaryius Thomas to start the season.
Yep.
Then they didn't. Then they had him, then they didn't. Then they had Antonio Brown. And they've chosen. They let Demaryius Thomas go. They let Antonio Brown go. What they would have had.
And I got to give you one more is Josh Gordon.
Yeah, exactly. Who is playing so well for the Seahawks. He's with the Seahawks now, right?
Yes.
Yes. He's doing great. You're right. That's an excellent one. And any one of those guys would have been their number one option. And then you've got Edelman as the number two. I mean, Antonio Brown would have been the number one. Josh Gordon would not have been the number one. That's true. But if you had Antonio Brown, then you would have Edelman he's a great number two.
He'd be a great number two.
And Sanu would be an outstanding number three. You're asking these guys to step up into roles that they're really not best suited for. But that's their problem. That's the Patriots' problem. For once, they're a little jigging. They're give and take. We're going to bring a lacrosse player out of nowhere, and he's going to be the star. It might be over. They might be outed right now with how they have managed this whole receiving core.
Well, as you describe it, they are one elite wide receiver away. And there is one elite wide receiver on the sidelines tweeting out that he wants back.
Yes, he is.
Is there any way that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady talk Robert Kraft into taking Antonio Brown back to the team?
100% yes. Because when you can ball, they don't care what's – nobody cares what you're in here, not just the Patriots. Anyone in the NFL, honestly, if you can ball, they'll find a way to get you in. The issue that I think will be seen is that – and maybe you would know more about this. This – you know, he can be on the commissioner's exempt list, right? Like if he gets signed by a team, then the NFL can kick in any part of a punishment phase, right?
Right. So he does still have this process ongoing. It is unclear whether the NFL will allow him to play. But he is available at the moment. And he is sort of just what the Patriots need.
He is what
they need. He would restack that whole wide receiver depth chart as we just described. The only thing they really can't do is find a better solution for Ben Watson at tight end.
Right. There are no
It doesn't look like Gronk's coming back.
No, but you know what is tricky about that? You really have to be careful, whatever team it is who's going to bring in Antonio Brown, because it's not like, oh, well, the Patriots let him go because of the sexual assault allegations. Nope. The Patriots said, we know about that. And this was after the circus with the Raiders. I mean, we don't even have to get into all the different tricks he did to get himself released from there. Then this was the sexual assault allegations, but that wasn't enough. Then the Patriots said, don't talk about it. And he tweets it, and then that blows up. It was several things that Antonio Brown did.
You don't need to point out that He is a mess. He's a time bomb waiting to go off. But at some point, they may just look in the mirror and say, we're not going to the Super Bowl without him. Why don't we take a flyer and see if we can go to the Super Bowl with him?
Sure. They're going to try.
All right, when we come back, we're going to take a look at the other great matchup this weekend. I tell you what, that Ravens 49ers, it could be a precursor to the Super Bowl.
That's what I thought.
We'll take a look at, is Lamar Jackson now the MVP of the NFL when we return on SB Nation Radio?
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Jose playing music to fire it up, and I can tell you that you can fire it up by trusting the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Their professionals know what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, somebody else firing it up is the Minnesota Vikings. That team is
first off one on the board.
Right away, they have come down the field and scored. Vikings on top of an opening drive touchdown, and they need this one. A big-time matchup for two teams that are really angling for good seeding in the NFC, which will be very, very competitive. I'll tell you what, the NFC looks very, very powerful right now. And one of their great powers, the 49ers, was in a really good matchup against the Ravens.
Oh, that was a game.
I mean, when you look at those two teams, it is quite reasonable to say that was a precursor to the Super Bowl. Both those teams on the short list for the big game this year. I mean, right now in the AFC, the Ravens sit at 10-2. They will be the number one seed unless something changes. I mean, the Patriots are 10-2 as well, but the Ravens have the tiebreaker over the Patriots. 49ers, 10-2. They've got a shot at the number one seed, although tonight's game with the Seahawks and the Vikings really matters to them. But that was a good time matchup in tough weather conditions. I do think the tough weather conditions hurt the 49ers more than the Ravens.
And the 49ers. That's a 10 a.m. start time if you're San Francisco.
Yep.
You know, you're going across country. It's post-Thanksgiving. You're going across the country. You've got tough weather. So when you think about it, the final score was Ravens over the 49ers 2017 by a field goal. You know, in the betting world, the home team gets 3 points. So if you look at that and you take into consideration the time of the year, the travel, the time difference, and all of that, that's an evenly matched game. I mean, that's really exciting. And I will say Lamar Jackson did not have the best game of his, you know, his season so far. He still was phenomenal, of course. But just fascinating to see how tight that was.
Well, this is why I think the rain, it may have even helped the Ravens just a little bit.
Sure.
Because the Ravens don't need Lamar to be a dominant passer when he can run so effectively. Jimmy G is not going to ever run like Lamar.
No.
So if the game gets relegated to running, well, yeah, advantage Ravens. And yes, to your point, I mean, Lamar's passing stats, he only passed for 105 yards, but he rushed for 101 on 16 rushes. So yes, the fact that he can be so effective with his legs really helps them in a game when the weather gets tough. And the weather may be tough as we enter January for the playoffs.
Sure, absolutely. Okay, I want to ask you about Kyle Shanahan and his coaching job yesterday. How did you feel about his decision on 4th-and-1?
Okay, it was a big 4th-and-1. 49ers have a chance. They're moving down the field.
6:30 left in the game.
6:30 left in the game. I liked the decision to go for it on 4th-and-1. I think it was the right decision. I think they had a chance to seize the moment, go down the field, get the lead. But instead of handing the ball off or finding a way to get that 1 yard, they passed it. And that's what I didn't like. I think he should have run with the ball. They had run the ball very well most of the game. They've been averaging about 6 yards per carry.
Yep, which is fantastic.
I think you got to hand the ball off there on 4th-and-1. Shanahan has a bit of a history of not having a confidence in the run when you go back to Atlanta.
I was just going to say Super Bowl 50 right here in Houston.
Yeah, he should have been handing the ball off a lot more back then.
You think you would have learned after that very painful lesson?
Well, they're not particularly analogous, but they are sort of interesting to reflect on. He missed it there. Ball falls incomplete. It was batted down at the line. Jimmy G's pass went nowhere. And it seemed to swing the momentum back to the Ravens, and they were able to go down and win the game. As we enter the playoffs and as we think about great matchups, the kicking game, special teams, seems to be a much bigger deal, much more pronounced. And one thing the Ravens have, and it was just accentuated yesterday, is Justin Tucker.
The Tucker factor.
The Tucker factor is huge. To kick a 49-yard game winner in the rain is outstanding. He may be the best kicker in the game today.
Well, he is the most accurate kicker in NFL history. How about that? And you look, I love that you brought up the issue of kicking in the NFL this season particularly, because you look at the Indianapolis Colts and Adam Vinatieri, who has been clockwork. He has been an absolute liability this season for the Colts.
Yep.
So it's key when you've got to have your Justin Tuckers if you want to go far and deep. And the Ravens, the Ravens have kind of everything. They've got it all right now.
Well, round that out with the kicking and having Tucker is exceptional. One sort of funny footnote to that game was the...
Oh, gosh. Was it the flag planting?
Yeah, the flag planting. It never stops. Of course, the history of this is that when Oklahoma beat Ohio State at Ohio State, Baker Mayfield went and planted the Oklahoma flag on the Ohio State field. And then Joey Bosa got revenge.
On Monday Night Football
when the 49ers beat the Browns. He planted the flag against the Browns. But yesterday it was tight end Mark Andrews,
here it came,
formerly of Oklahoma, and now with the Ravens, he planted the flag after a TD in response to Boas planting the flag against Mayfield. Some roots grow deep, do they not?
I just don't love that Mayfield's moves are trending. I think we should.
We'll have a league that copies the actions of Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, that's not great, but whatever.
I do want to go to some of the biggest surprises of yesterday.
Do tell.
And I will say first, the Eagles losing to the Dolphins.
What?
I did not see that coming.
I'm not surprised.
Well, it was a road game. Everything was set up for the Eagles. I mean, the Cowboys lost on Thursday. Eagles with a real chance to get right back in it, take control of the NFC East. Eagles will face the Cowboys in a few weeks. They were poised. Well, one thing everyone's saying about the NFC East, and they've been saying this for a couple of weeks, is
weakest division.
And while the Eagles have an easy schedule down the stretch and the Cowboys have a harder schedule down the stretch, but all that goes out the door if the Eagles can't beat the Dolphins, the 3-win Dolphins.
I mean, unbelievable, honestly. And I just really think, looking at a broader picture, I think there is an issue in that locker room. And I'm talking about the Philadelphia locker room. I think ever since Wentz went out, Foles took over, Foles won the Super Bowl, Foles led that team.
You think he won the heart and soul of the rest of the team and the players?
I do. And because it was after that, when Wentz was rehabbing his ACL and all of that talk of him coming back, that there was issues that he had issues with the guys in the lock with his team.
Yep.
And he didn't deny it. He said, well, I think it's because I've been rehabbing away from the team because it's hard for me to be around that and this and that. I think there's an issue. Honestly, the 10,000 foot view is I don't think he's got solidarity in that locker room.
Mm. Tough job. Doug Peterson yesterday looked like a man who's just looking for answers.
Yeah.
Of course, one of the big issues for the Eagles is their secondary. And credit the Dolphins, credit Devontae Parker. He has emerged as a very effective, if not elite, wide receiver for the Dolphins. Clearly the best player on the Dolphins team, in my mind. And Ryan Fitzpatrick has always shown that for a game or two or three, but at about four, no, he drops off. But for about two or three games,
he can play
at a very elite level.
He's a little tiny placeholder.
Yes, he turns into Fitz magic, and then suddenly it goes awry. But he had it yesterday, and Devontae Parker was his target. When we come back, we got a real treat. We're going to get a chance to visit with Jeff Fisher. You remember he was the longstanding head
Jeff
coach.
Fisher.
Oilers,
former
Titans.
Trojan, don't you forget.
He's a former Trojan. But one of the great stories right now in the NFL is the emergence of the Titans. They sit at 7-5. They're on the cusp of a playoff spot. We'll ask him about his Titans and his Ryan Tannehill turn this franchise around. Is he the answer? All right, when we return, it'll be Jeff Fisher here on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
And joining us now on SB Nation Radio is former NFL head coach Jeff Fisher. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. You're on with David and Carla.
Well, my pleasure. How are you guys doing tonight?
Well, we're doing great. It's funny. I've got your bio in front of me, and I see 22 seasons as an NFL head coach. That can't be. You're too young for that to be.
He started when he was seven.
Yeah, actually, seven and a half. Yeah.
And if nothing will age you more than being an NFL head coach, I would presume.
Oh, no, it's funny, too, because, you know, over the years, you know how the world is out there, and it's like, oh, well, I'm something like a few losses away from being the all-time losingest head coach. And I thought, well, if you do the math, and I go 10-6 every year, which I think people would probably think that's probably pretty good.
Yes.
And you have the most, then you have the most losses all time if you're in it for 20 years. So anyway.
Well, it's like, I get it. Babe Ruth had the strikeout record, right?
Exactly.
So that's not bad company.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So it went fast, man, and I had a blast. I got so many great memories, and it's just really blessed to be having that opportunity and you know, bouncing around a little bit, did some moving, moved some franchises.
Oh, gosh, you really did.
The memories are really pretty cool, guys. Thank you.
Well, Jeff, you did move with the Oilers that became the Titans, the St. Louis Rams that became the Los Angeles Rams. Let's take a look at a franchise that has moved and see if you see any hope for the L.A. Chargers. Can they recover a fan base, get a fan base? They can't even fill a soccer stadium right now. It seems to be an away game every week for the Chargers. What do you see happening there?
Well, it's a difficult road, and I knew that going into it. If you'll recall, they started off when they moved up north. And remember, Philip and Kellen Clemens were commuting together and driving and studying in the car on the way up. They started off 0-4, and they're driving 2 hours. And, you know, I knew it was going to be hard because there's nothing easy about it. And, you know, you can say, hey, look, we got to come to work every day. It doesn't matter what's going on outside. But, you know, when you look outside and the surroundings change every day, it's a little unsettling. And so as far as their future, you know, I've been a Philip Rivers fan forever, and I've had great respect for that organization. I think Tom Telesco is an outstanding GM. They're on the right track. And, you know, it's just hard, you know, and I don't know. I mean, you guys probably could answer this better than I can. But if they stayed, they've lost, what, 7 games by a touchdown?
I know, it's been tight.
Something like that. Yeah, so if you stay home, do you win those games? I don't know. I can't answer that. But I can speak from experience, you know, having coached 2 franchises in 5 different cities and 6 different stadiums, there's going to be some hard times. And you know, and you're being compared to everybody else that slides into that new stadium or wherever and doesn't have the distractions of where you're going to have camp or where we're going to live and all those kind of things. So it's not easy. Let me just say that. And I hope for the Chargers organization that they are able to get settled and reacquire that great fan base that they had.
Well, they also have a unique situation in L.A. being they're not hungry for an NFL franchise because of your alma mater, USC, which the city loves that. Then they've got the Rams, and they love the Lakers, and they've got the Clippers. And, I mean, there's just a lot competing for their attention.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When the move was finalized and we were heading out to L.A. from St. Louis, I had to consult or get approval from the league, from the NFL Management Council and the Players Association, just to be able to have an off-season team meeting, which was voluntary. Those kind of things are mind-boggling to me still to this day. you know, how they don't permit those things. That's for another show, guys. But the point of it is that, you know, we got everybody together in March at the Manhattan Beach Marriott. And, you know, we had probably, keep in mind, I mean, your roster at that time is not very big. We probably had 40, 50 guys there. And basically what I told them was, the message of the meeting was, you know, hey, guys, we're not moving to L.A. We're going to be playing in L.A. And here's where we're going to be training. And you have to take that into consideration when you start to locate. And I showed the different franchises in L.A. And when you go through baseball, you go through the Dodgers and the Angels, and then you go to basketball, and then you go to hockey. And I mean, there's teams all over the L.A. basin. And everybody's living in certain places. But, yeah, there's a lot. I mean, from a sports standpoint, it's spread pretty thin. And you left out the Bruins. And, you know, I mean, there's just a lot going on in L.A. And so, you know, I think people thought that it would be a little too congested for the Chargers. We're just going to have to wait and see.
We're talking to former NFL head coach Jeff Fisher. So I want to talk about two of your teams, the Titans and the Rams, are both sitting at 7-5, yet it feels pretty different to me. The Titans have been such a pleasant surprise in some sense, and Ryan Tannehill coming out of nowhere and the play of Derrick Henry. Are you surprised at how effective the Titans have been and that they sit 7-5 and perhaps on their way into the playoffs?
I'm not surprised. You know, I'm spending half my time in Nashville and then half my time in Montana the last couple of years. And so, you know, I follow the Titans probably more so than I follow the Rams, but I'm not surprised. I think Mike's done a good job. You know, out of fairness to Marcus Mariota, we'll go there first. I mean, poor Marcus had a new coordinator every single year of his career, and that's hard. And, you know, but they've settled in. When Derek decided, it's almost like Eddie George showed up at his front door and said, dude, you need to run behind your pads. You're not Barry Sanders, okay? You big boy, you need to put the big boy pads on and go. And that's what he's done, and it's pretty impressive. And so I believe that they're built for this month. They're playing good defense. You know, they've got good special teams. They blocked a field goal yesterday and returned it for a touchdown. And so I think they're built well for this month to make a run. They stayed somewhat healthy. They lost Delaney. I think they put Delaney on IR. But, you know, I think they're built. As far as the Rams are concerned, that, you know, that's, you know, I still got a lot of friends there and players there that we acquired. And, you know, it's hard. It's a short off season when you come off the Super Bowl appearance. There's a lot of distractions. You know, they've gone out of their way to build that club for success now. I think they're going to have to do some real creative things in the future over the next few years because of cap space and the lack of draft choices, and they've had injuries. But don't count them out. Sean's an outstanding coach. You know, we all know what Wade can do and Coach Fossil can do, so I wouldn't count them out. But I don't because of injuries and what you've seen thus far, I think there's some competition in that division, namely up north, not west. And I think both those teams are going to end up in the playoffs. The team is playing now. And then, of course, the 49ers have had a great, great year so far.
We're being joined by former head coach in the NFL of 22 years, Jeff Fisher, and also former cornerback for the USC Trojans under the infamous John Robinson. So let me ask you about USC, Jeff. So the program's been all over the map, honestly, since Pete Carroll left a long time ago in the Leinart Reggie Bush era. A new AD is coming into USC to clean this place up. What do you think is the future for head coach Clay Helton?
You know, I've been watching the program closely, and it's really tough on Clay, particularly because things that are out of his control. For example, you know, this is the third AD in, what, 4 or 5 years now with Pat and J.K. leaving and then Lynn coming in and now the new change. So that's hard. But as you guys know, and for the listeners, Hey, look, if you're Clay Helton right now and you're in somebody's living room and you're recruiting, you know, and you walk out and the next guy walks in, the next guy's going to say, hey, look, you don't need to go there because there's no stability there. So the bottom line is this, and it's not Clay's fault. He's a victim of circumstances, is that recruiting is taking a hit. And, you know, and it's hard to overcome that when there's the lack of stability and continuity. Players don't want to commit and walk on campus not knowing what the future of their head coach is. And that's unfair. So, you know, someone needs to make a decision, give him a vote of confidence right now so he can recruit and get back to where they can be competitive in the Pac-12. Because it's just not fair. His hands are tied. And so, you know, I've had some time off, as you guys know, and I've spent some time in the college game and gotten a lot closer to it. And, you know, it's all about that. And that's how it is in the Pac-12 is, you know, and no different than any other conference for that matter, but it's rough on Clay, and he's a good coach. He's a good guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the coaching changed last year. I know he was disappointed, you know, when he had a coordinator for a couple weeks and then he went to the Cardinals. But, exactly. You know, they've got things in place. I think I'm not going to speak as a coach now, but I'm going to speak as a former player. And I'm speaking for a lot of those guys that have come through there between my journey there and now. Guys want to see it go back to the old ways.
Yeah, they do.
You know, they want physical, tough, disciplined football. And I cringe when I hear people say the Trojans are soft.
I know.
You know, and I'm not saying that. I'm just saying people are saying that, and you don't want to hear that about your alma mater, because I know when we were back in the old days, we were not soft. You know, we hurt the next day. And, you know, and so did the opponent.
We're talking to former NFL coach Jeff Fisher. I've got about a minute left. I want to ask you, Lamar Jackson, that offense in the Ravens, how would you try to stop it? If you were coming up with a scheme, would you be aggressive with guys in the box? Would you play tight coverage, zone coverage, man coverage? How would you stop Lamar Jackson's offense today?
Well, you got to do a combination of everything that you listed. You know, Lamar's not going outside with the ball right now. The ball's not going outside the numbers. The ball is in between. It's down the field. And he is a phenomenal athlete. And there's more to the Ravens than just the quarterback. The defense is playing well. We saw yesterday how great a kicker they have. When you play defense and you can run the football this time of the year, you're a hard team to stop. And I'm really impressed with what Coach Harbaugh's done and that staff in turning that team around. But they just didn't turn it around with Lamar. And I'm not taking anything away from him. He is a rare athlete playing the quarterback position, and he's special. So they're going to be hard to stop. Defending them again, you got to do a lot of different things. And when you get them in space, you know, you got to use the sideline. You got to flatten them out. You got to try to get them down. And, you know, the big thing is from this day forward, you know, the next 3 or 4 weeks, if a defensive unit can hold them to a field goal, it's a win.
That's
well
great.
Said.
Good stuff. Head coach Jeff Fisher, thank you so much for joining us here on Espionation Radio.
All right, my pleasure, guys. Have a great night. Get back to this ball game.
Yes.
You got it. Thanks, coach.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So great to talk to former NFL head coach Jeff Fisher, a font of wisdom there. He has seen so much from the transition of teams from one city to the other, which was sort of interesting to see how that applies to the Chargers and the challenges of building a fan base and getting continuity there. But then his insights on Clay Helton and what's going on at USC, that the lack of stability, you can just imagine after Helton finishes a recruiting call to some family, yes, that the opposing coach, some other coach would walk in and say, why would you go to USC? You can come to my program, LSU, where there's far more stability. I'm staying. You have no idea whether Helton's going to be there next year.
No, it's so true. And I mean, they can use that as opposing coaches can use it as bait. And it's true. I mean, he doesn't know his fate. And if a parent asked him, are you going to be there next year? He can't in all confidence say, yes, I am. And
right.
USC's got their third AD in 5 years. He's just started, and it hasn't been said what's going to – I mean, there's rumors out there that Clay Helton is not going to make it through this athletic department change. It's really sad that he's a victim of circumstance because he's really taken a program that was hit hard by sanctions and really recovered it to a level of respectability. When you think about Utah sitting at number 5, Pac-12 Utah in the CFP rankings or AP rankings right now, their only loss – was at the hands of the USC Trojans and a third-string quarterback.
Who may be the number one quarterback next
right.
year. He looked pretty good.
I mean, that's about coaching.
Yeah.
And then to end the season with a beatdown of crosstown rival UCLA, Chip Kelly coached UCLA, that's really key. No matter what state that's in, when a rivalry game, it doesn't matter where your standings are. It's all about that. And they took care of business handily. So he's really, Clay Helton's done everything he can. I don't know. It's up to the higher-ups.
You know, instability works two ways. Helton's been under siege. Lincoln Riley at the top of the heap having great success, but now you read every day, oh, he might go to the Cowboys, he might go to the Browns. That surely doesn't help Oklahoma recruiting either at the other end of the spectrum.
I've got a new name for you for the Cowboys. We'll reveal that in hour two.
All right, let's take a look at that. Who will be the Cowboys head coach?
Of course, oh, I'm already
when we return.
Your guy's gone. But
SB Nation Radio.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.